three, two.
Open my eyes that I may see glimpses of truth that for me. Open my eyes, illumine me, Spirit divine.
Welcome to New Realities. My name is Alan Steinfeld, and each week I present a program that really I feel is at the investigation of consciousness, whatever that may mean to you. But it's a time of transformation. It's a time of bringing a new awareness to who we are as a culture, as individuals, as a planetary formation. And tonight's guest is someone who combines everything that I really love about doing this show, which involves consciousness, art, creativity, who we are as personal expression. Her name is Muriel Gold, and she does a process called Drawn Home, and we'll be talking about that process and her work. Hi, Muriel.
Hi, Alan.
Hi, thanks for being a guest. But, you know, talking to you, hanging out with you, meeting you, and this act of that you do as in your work, let's see, it's okay, let's start from the beginning. So Drawn Home is a process that you've created to help other people tap into their creativity. Would that be fair to say, or how would you describe that, your process?
Yes, I think it would be fair to say it that way. I didn't really know I was starting it, in fact. I was just having a conversation with a friend exactly like you and I are. Mm. And out of that conversation came me sharing what I was learning with my teacher, a man who's now died, called Cecil Collins.
Mm. Well, let me just back up and say Drawn Home is a life, it's a drawing class that you teach people, but you teach them to draw in a way where they're tapping into themselves more,
right,
in a way more than expressing what they see in the world. It's more what they're feeling about what they're seeing.
Well, I would put it really like this, I think, that Drawn Home, it wasn't like that how it started, but it's become like that over time. Mm-hmm. I discovered that drawing, in a certain way, was a language with which we can talk to ourselves. Now, by that I mean I discovered, when I was already getting on halfway through my life, that I wasn't really in touch with myself. I didn't know myself. I wasn't intimate with myself. I was living what I'd been taught to do, which was basically to try and be a good girl, and I was lonely. So what this guy taught me was a way of touching with my hands and with instruments, reeds and brushes and quills and chalks, touching whatever it was I was drawing in this arena. It was life drawing, which is a traditional in the arts. Touching the atmosphere of the pose, you could say, which eventually for me became touching the mystery of life as it lived itself in this human form.
Uh-huh. So when you say, this backing up, when you say you were lonely, you weren't lonely for people.
Not at all. No.
You were lonely for something else, deeper.
I was lonely for something that I didn't know. I didn't know I was lonely, and I eventually didn't know what I was lonely for. It was like I had an itch, which I couldn't scratch away.
Right.
And if you see what I mean.
Yes. A longing, a yearning
deep inside for something that I didn't really know existed. Mm. And slowly, without knowing it, as I touched the poses, and my models take the poses up from music, so they will move through a range of humanity, and they become very quiet with that, and that quietness is shown in the in their movements, and people will say, hold it there, please, and we will then draw this pose. And by touching the atmosphere of this particular aspect of humanity, it mirrored back the quietness that one felt in the pose into oneself.
Mm.
And I began to feel, oh, this is so sweet. Mm. And this I can't live without.
Wait, but there's something, there's a step I want to just get or want other people to get. So when they,
yeah.
when these models are moving through the pose and you say, just hold that, then how do they feel into what they're seeing?
Well, I start usually with our hands. So to start with, I would say, just wait. I mean, maybe, for instance, they may then close their eyes for a few seconds or not. So they come to a stop, as it were, in what's going on in the mind, you could say. And then if your eyes were shut, I would say let your eyelids open up and let your empty gaze fall, if you like, on the pose, fall on the person modeling, and don't do anything until something in you generates a kind of invitation which comes up as, oh, I'd like to touch that. So then I would put my hands in a bowl of water and I would have red clay, for instance, to start with often. And I'd kind of wash my hands with the ball of red clay, as if I was washing them with soap, which would charge my hands up with water and clay, and then I would touch the part of the pose which spoke to me the strongest with my hands, either with the front or with the back, and from that touch, I'd wait with that touch, and then something else in the hand, say I start in the middle of the body, in the tummy area, and I'd wait there until something else, it could be the tilt of the head, or the position of the hand, or the quietness of the back.
Something touches you that
yeah.
brings on, like we talked today a little bit, a feeling sense.
It,
right?
yeah, it opens something which is
yeah.
palpably touching, affecting one. You mm-hmm. could say in the heart, but I don't mean emotionally.
Right, you mean is a deep core in oneself.
Yes, a deep mm-hmm. core in oneself responds to something in the pose, and that I ask them to touch, and I let them touch it, and then I just show them how to follow touching other things, and these touches slowly, slowly become a language. Each time we touch the quietness of a shoulder resonating with the plainness of the back or the emptiness of the expression of the face or the tilt of the head, that quietness resonates in ourselves and we begin to enjoy something we didn't know we have.
But you're also creating art or creative art as a spiritual practice in you know,
well,
a general
I'm nervous.
Sense.
Yes, that's true-ish. I'm nervous for the word practice because I feel this has to be without agenda to succeed. And
well,
without
there's nothing
fear.
To succeed if you, we just feel. If you're talking about feeling, right?
Yeah.
That's the only
absolutely
success.
Right. So there's nothing to succeed at. It's just to feel, and that feel mirrors back the quietness of what we feel, which is, you could call it the quietness, the atmosphere of the pose. It mirrors back that same mystery of quietness, which is our basic nature.
Is that quietness what other people may call eternity or the eternal mystery?
Yes, I guess it is. It's like a presence, a palpable presence of something which touches us and we can't say what it is.
And it's the mystery because we can't say it. Yeah.
I'm sorry?
No, I'm saying I'm getting the sense, and we've talked about that. Presence is the mystery because it can't be.
Absolutely.
It can't be named.
And in my book, that's why I draw. Because also I would say that this that we're talking about can't actually be told. It can be said in words, which doesn't necessarily mean that the content of it is communicated, because words are basically just a signpost.
Right. They're a signpost to the sense. The sensation, what are the words a signpost to?
The words, okay, hang on, that's a good question. Let me just think it The words are a signpost that orientates the mind, if you like, to cooperate with whatever's coming up. So if you give the mind a little bit of something it recognizes, enough, you could say, for it to lie down and say, okay, do what you like, feel what you like. Mm. And so in a way, our antennae of our sensibility passes beyond the mind and touches and drinks, you could say. It drinks from a well of silence off the pose, which you could call the presence of, well, you know, there are a million words for it. I try to avoid the cultural words because they've got connotations. I prefer to call it just quietness. And I feel it's a good word because we experience quietness in the body. Apparently.
What do you mean we experience quietness in the body?
Well, it's palpable. It's when I'd say it's in the body, I mean, one doesn't know where quietness is. One actually, if we look, we don't know where our experiences arise. We don't even exactly know where our thoughts take place. We can't, if we look, my experience is we can't say where I am. We only know that awareness, we only know that seeing, you could say, sees what's going on, and that seeing can open to a different field of perception, which is deeply satisfying. And the nearest I could say to it in feeling is just quietness. It's not through the ears, it's nothing to do with hearing with the ears, but it's got a presence, you could as use your word, of eternity.
Right, so it's the stillness that is our essential self. Is that
absolutely. That? Absolutely. So, a bit like when we're born.
Right.
It's empty.
But you see, we understand this language, but there's probably a lot of people and artists particularly who might be listening who don't know what that's about. Because you were an artist up until you said you were 50 and you were busy thinking and creating designs and doing all these things that probably were beautiful or whatever. But, and then you found out that you were lonely, but then to transfer this to art somehow, or to create the creative act, you had to make an internal shift of something as an artist. Something happened to you, and it wasn't just that you discovered that you were lonely. There was a type of thinking, probably, that happened, that changed for you, right?
Well, I think two things happened, Alan. When I was an ordinary painter, I mostly painted in oils, and I loved it.
Mm-hmm.
But as well as loving it, I noticed that there was an agenda in me to succeed. And that kind of spoiled it in a way.
Succeed how? Like to capture the landscape?
Well, you know, she's a good painter. Yeah, have you seen her work? Yeah, it's worth buying. And so in a way, it patted me on the back, you could say. And that did have not a good smell about it. I didn't like that feeling because it wasn't completely authentic. So what was completely authentic in painting was very hard to say. It sometimes when the colors flowed and the various harmonies happened and energy ran, it was exciting. But this thing would come in and say, oh, wow, maybe this is going to be a good one. Maybe I'll frame it and sell it. And this spoilt it. Mm. Okay, so that gives you a bad feeling, or it did me anyway. And then what happened was, completely without me making any decision, I saw an exhibition of my then teacher called Cecil Collins, and something in me, though I didn't particularly like his paintings, but something really rattled my heart.
Mm.
And I thought, I have to go and taste what he's got. Now, what he had, he wasn't a painterly painter, and there was no much sensuality, which I was. I loved the sensuality of paint. I was a pupil, and I knew Kokoschka, and I loved the way he painted.
Mm-hmm.
But Cecil didn't have any of that. They were thin paintings by comparison, and from a painter's point of view, they didn't really, my eyes didn't like them. However, when I went away from the exhibition, something spoke to me, and I didn't know what it was, so I went back again, and I found that he had paintings like, for instance, I can't quite remember all the titles, but one was like, say, The Spirit of the Dawn, or The Spirit of the Dust, or something like that, and that left an atmospheric feeling in me, which had a very satisfying resonance. So anyway, I found him, and then I went, and being with him changed my attitude, and I began to see that there was more to I than doing a good so-called painting from a technical point of view.
Mm-hmm.
And interestingly enough, that when I first went to him, I did the best I could because somehow my heart knew it was really important. And he looked through about 40 drawings I'd done, and he tutted his tongue in his mouth and got more and more cross and taciturn and said, "Oh, what a pity." And he hunched over and was getting very unhappy. And he finally said, "What a pity. What a pity. You haven't seen anything at all." And suddenly I saw I hadn't seen beyond the exterior form. And they're trying to get that form right.
Uh huh. And so then the change was that now my interpretation is like you're not seeing beyond the external form, but you're feeling something that is beyond the external form. Is that
absolutely? Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, funnily enough, then I didn't know this, but now I would say that there's an aspect of being human, which is empty and naked of the conditioned aspect, the life of us, a mystery of we can't give it a name, and that sees itself, and through the form of my hands or my instruments, it tastes and touches itself, and that's what's so deeply satisfying.
So let me get that, because I mean, you've said it before in other situations. So that thing that is essentially human or essentially us can feel or sees what's essential in other things and try and attempts to express that somehow, and in that emptiness of expression, that's where the satisfaction on, let's say, a soul level is achieved.
Yes, that I think you could easily put it that way. In my book, I wouldn't go so far as to say I'm trying to actually express anything. Now, for me, touching this that we're talking about, be it through drawing or through anything else I do, is essential for me to stay in touch with myself. Which is
what is that that you're doing in anything that you do? And
well, I mean, like, let's say you see the wind in the trees.
Uh-huh.
And so you have a tree, you have the branches out, you have the leaves lying still at the ends of the branches, and then a breeze comes along and moves the leaves. And that has somehow in me awakens a seeing, and my heart just bows to it. It doesn't know what it is. My brain and my mind, you could say, doesn't know what it is, but my heart does know. And it does a sort of bow, which feels just like a very quiet, very deep loving.
Right, but then this thing we called art or something, where you then feel that, express it. What is the purpose? I mean, if the essential purpose is to feel that, and I get what you're saying about the heart, then why do we make this thing, these artifacts, for other people to... Why can't they just have their own experience of the wind? Why we do art is what I'm asking.
Well, I do art because of what I told you, actually. I don't do it for other people anymore.
Right.
I used to think I made pictures for other people to sell and blah, blah, which, of course, had an ego-based agenda behind them, because basically I wanted to be accepted, acknowledged, praised and all the things that the characters want.
Right.
But and then I saw through that and found that it was not a satisfactory way to live. And I just found that I can't live without touching this. I don't do it for you, the gallery, the bank manager, the parents, the partner, or anything else. I do it because, why do you have breakfast? Because your body is hungry.
I guess I was asking what the purpose of art, but I'm also getting from what you're saying, if you have that feeling of the wind moving through the trees and you somehow can express that or feel that, and if I look at something that you've done and I get that feeling too, or another feeling perhaps, then we're just encouraging, or we are reinforcing each other's ability to feel. I guess I'm asking, what is the purpose of art, or maybe?
You know, you could say the purpose of art is to make things beautiful, to bring other people's awareness to the beauty of nature, of etc. I can only tell you what my own experience is.
Yeah.
And to me, the primary purpose, in fact, I think I'd say the only real purpose for me is to touch this quietness with which I actually cannot live my life without.
Mm.
I get lonely, I get ratty, I get anxious, I get too busy, and the conditioned character starts taking over and living what's supposed to be socially a good life, and it doesn't hit the spot. Unless I go back in one way or another and touch this, which has to be touched, which actually I would say is, call it what you will. Some people call it God. There are millions of names all over the world. You could call it consciousness. You could call it energy. You could call it mystery. Mm-hmm. I think this has a yearning to touch itself in others, in the other forms of life, other people. When we fall in love, in my book, this is what we mirror to each other, this mystery of sacredness, you could call it. But I don't really like religious words just because they've been so misused.
Right, but I'm also getting what you're saying is that when you do touch that and you do feel it, I think, and the character, as you say, is out of the way, other people feel that too.
Ah, yes. Now that I completely agree with, but that's very different from doing it for that reason.
Right,
I don't do it for that reason. When I'm authentic, it's like the sun. You know, it can't help shining. When I'm totally myself, it comes out as a shine of presence, relaxation, quietness, celebration, friendship, love. When it's genuine, it can't help but shine. That's why I don't actually have a reason for doing it other than nourishing this center of what it is to be human. When that is nourished, everything is perfect. People might say, hold on a sec, that's a pretty broad statement. But what I mean is, it's okay, so we're coming into another dimension here. This play we go, I think this is actually what everybody wants, even those of us who go out to be rich, glamorous, successful, etc. This is what we're really after. We don't know it, so it gets cloaked in other stories. But
no, I think you're on to something. This fulfillment of our essential character of being, I mean, that's the sense I get, this thing that's, like, as you said, the pure virgin self. Why don't you give your definition of virginity?
Yeah, well, I think I said it to you before. I actually, because I was found that I was using a coined phrase, you could say. I made a coined phrase called, which I said, it was a kind of virginity of being. And I thought, well, Meryl, I wonder, you better look up this word virgin and find out, really, to use it accurately. Otherwise, you know, people argue with you from the mind, which I didn't want to have, so I looked it up, and there was a whole lot of stuff about virgins, which actually I thought was completely missing the mark. But what it did finally say at the end, which I thought was really beautiful, that virgin is something, virginity is something to which nothing has been added. And I thought, oh, wow, isn't that just beautiful? So it's like, I mean, the whole of our Christian story in the West is based around what happens in virginity. What happens in virginity is that a principle incomprehensible to the mind, you could call it the Christ is what it's called in the Christian arena, is conceived and begins to live. And actually, it's really interesting because if you look at our seasons, you know, I sometimes think if we contemplate nature, we wouldn't need to go to sages. Nature would teach it all to us.
Yeah.
For instance, you know, we go through summer, the full beautiful flowering, and then it drops off. We go into biting winter. It's muddy, cold, icy, yucky. Whoops, the world has died. From nature's point of view, this is how it appears. But so we can come to this emptiness in ourselves, and the mind doesn't usually let us stay there because, oh, it says it can't be that simple. It must be more to it than that. And it moves off and goes outside looking for something again. But if we can abide there in that quietness, spring always follows winter. And in this virginity of being, my experience is if I'm willing to stay there, which is not always comfortable, because the mind doesn't know what's going on, in this quietness, something mysteriously begins to, as it were, grow. And it's a feeling of oneself. It's a sensation. No, it's not a sensation. It's a palpable arising of a feeling which ultimately we cannot live without. The feeling we get, you know, if you go after something in the world, we have, and you really succeed, you win something in the Olympic Games, and wow, I've got to what I was going for, and for about 5 minutes, one is in the clear, one is just in quietness. And then the yearning for other things creeps in again. In that quietness, something new happens.
Mm-hmm.
Like your beautiful title of New Reality, which is a beautiful title. Of course, it's not the reality that's new. It's we, in our stage, in this time that we're living, are more open, and we are willing to look more, and the newness is in the way we see things. It used to be the sages, the Moses, the Abrahams, the Jesuses, the Buddhas, the Brahmins, Baba. Now, ordinary folks like you and me are beginning to have this, what used to be special, seeing of seeing past the surface of life to a deeper reality.
The deeper mystery, the deeper,
mystery.
I like the sense that this mystery has to be constantly renewed, in a sense. I think that's what you're saying. Even if you win the Olympic medals and you've achieved a momentary goal, it slides through our fingers so quickly.
Absolutely.
And it's lost. This thing that you're going for, this mystery of being, let's say, this the quietness, in a way it's also a goal, but and it's also just as elusive, but there's another something else to it, you know? It's not a goal in that sense. It's something that just we are, of course, but it's just as elusive in some ways because it's there, and then perhaps it's not, like we were saying. So how do you explain that? Is it ever just there?
It's always there. It's always there, of course. That's why I say reality is not new.
Mm-hmm.
It's always there. Whether we notice it or not is new.
Right. It's
for
always there, but we're
folks.
Not always there. That's
exactly. And that's what's new for us. Ordinary folks in society are now, heaven knows why, are beginning to notice wow, there's more to life than being success, and even more to life than being knocked down by being a complete failure. Even if you're in prison, you've committed crimes, you can find this quietness in yourself. And you have a life which is worth living in a way, because it's giving back to consciousness what consciousness needs, which is a recognition of itself.
That quietness, that quietness is just our essential beingness. But then let's talk a little bit about the relationship of the pure being, that quietness, and this seems to be human compulsion to express. You know, that's what's...
Well, I think that human compulsion to express is consciousness yearning to find itself in its manifestation, which we call the world. And so we think it's us doing it, but actually consciousness is yearning to be reunited with itself. Now, interestingly enough, the word religion, if I believe I'm correct, so I might be slightly wrong, but the word religion, I think, comes from
to
be reunited with, which is exactly what we're talking about. So it's not that you and I are dying to express ourselves. It may look like that, but actually what's happening is consciousness is looking to be reunited with itself in all forms, and that means all forms. Otherwise, there wouldn't be a manifest world.
So you're saying consciousness is this compulsion itself, or this compelling part of us that wants to express. Is that what you say?
Well, you could call it express, but I think it's confusing. It's as if it's putting something out there to do. It's consciousness yearning to be met and to meet itself in others. For instance, if this was the case, and say you and I were at different polarities in the world, and our cultures were against each other, and we were required to go to war, and I come up in front of you and I see the same life living you as lives me, I'm not likely to put a knife through you.
Well, thank you very much. But no, I of course, because that is the consciousness, but I guess maybe I'm asking something a little different. Humans, like, just our speaking, these sounds we make that are communication, we have this compulsion to express this internal feeling out in the world, or to draw, or to make music. Is that what you're saying, is consciousness longing to connect with itself as well?
Absolutely. So it's fine. In ordinary parlance, it's fine to say, yes, we human beings have a desire to express ourselves. In ordinary language, that's perfectly true. But in my experience now, I realize that I'm part of what's seen in the world. I'm an object. I'm Meriel. I've been given a name, and I was successful in competitive sport. Is that what my real nature is? No, that's the role I was playing. I've been a mother. Is that my true nature? No, it's a role I was playing. I've been a wife. Was that my true nature? No, it's a role I was playing. What sees that role is what interests me, and I think it's a mystery, which witnesses itself, and it, there's a term, self-realization, which probably everybody who's listening to you will have heard, probably, possibly not been interested in, possibly has been. But actually, for ages, I thought, I, Meriel, if I'm a good girl and I meditate long enough and tie myself in knots, etc., will become self-realized. And it was seen that that is not the case. Actually, it's not true. It's actually consciousness. Or sacredness, or God, if you dare to use the word, I'm nervous of it myself. Right. It's what wakes up and finds itself in form, as form. The I am Meriel is separate and I'm a clever girl. Not at all. So it's what I call the Lord in drag as this character, and it wakes up and recognizes, wow, I'm not just that feisty girl. I am the life of her.
So life is like you said, life is living you. And
absolutely.
Yet Muriel or me, whoever that is, are these characters, but what's the purpose of all that? Why are we these characters? Why can't we just be consciousness? Maybe that's a silly question, but what's the purpose of the masquerade?
Well, let's just have a look at that really, really, really carefully, because this is a major stopping point. Let's just ask ourselves for absolute certain, do we really know that there is a purpose?
No, we do not know.
Look at the tree. Let's look at the trees. Let's look at the wind. Is there a purpose?
So the character wants to find purpose. Yeah, we're always, the human side, the limited human wants to find purpose for whatever reason.
Absolutely.
But you're saying there is no purpose, let's say, because obviously...
I'm beginning to see, well, hang on a sec. The flowers, do they have a purpose in the field? They just grow, and they just grow out to the light, which draws them up. They have absolutely no doing in the drawing up. You can't say, clever little flower, it did its growing. It was drawn up by the sun. And I'm not sure that there is a purpose from our point of view.
But is there a purpose to existence? I mean, can we say there isn't any either? I mean, is that fair to say there isn't a purpose? We can't say that either.
Let's say that, well, I don't know is the answer, to be truthful, but
right.
What I would say is this, if there is a purpose, it's to give, is to for the body-mind organism, through hopefully grace, you could say, cooperates with this awakening that my life is not my life, it's the life of a mystery of living. We call that mystery sacred because we don't understand it. The mind doesn't understand it. And I think if there's a purpose for me, it is to feed back this, is to realize that this is ultimate blasphemy. I should probably...
That's okay. We love that on this program.
We love that. I mean, basically, I is God.
The I is God, the observer, the consciousness.
So me, Muriel, the character, is a condition thing, full of aspects and etc. But what lives that? Let's call it I, and that I is the mystery of, call it life, call it mystery, call it the sacred, call it God. But I think I am lived by God, you could say. I mean, somebody actually asked me not so long ago, hey, Muriel, do you believe in God? And I was extremely surprised to hear myself say, absolutely not. And I thought, well, heavens alive, what do you mean, Muriel? And then I qualified it and said, actually, no, I don't believe in God. I'm lived by God.
I like that. I am lived by God. So
there's no me there. There's no me there at all. Actually,
only when you become the character. But that I, that is the I, is the same I in all people. That's why we recognize each other.
Absolutely. 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 So there's only one I. There's only one life. And that life lives everything that's born. The grass, the animals, the mountains, the molecules, the lot. Shakespeare said it well enough, all the world's a play, and it's really funny because, you know, we think Shakespeare's great, but actually, I don't think we know what he's talking about because he's telling us just this. The whole thing is a play. The whole manifest world is the play of the mystery of sacredness playing.
So, and there's also the Old Testament I am that I am, which is the only thing that we really are, is that the I am nature. But
absolutely.
So it's the I that is the sacred, is consciousness, but then the character, as you call it, it's also somehow an aspect of that sacredness as well. It's not different. I don't see... It's playing itself out, but it's not really different than the I on some level. Do you know what I'm saying? It's
just
the play.
Say that again. Could you say that
I'm
in
saying
rephrase?
I'm saying the character, the thing that's in the play, let's say, that's playing out the dramas of our existence, is still life living us as character.
Absolutely. Everything is this.
Mm-hmm.
It's as if, for instance, let's go into real story here.
Yeah.
Let's say, it's childish what I'm going to say, you know, God. Let's say God gets bored, or sacredness, or life, or whatever you call it, gets bored, and thinks, oh, I could do with making some fun for myself, so let's see, what shall I do? Ah, I know what I'll do. I'll hide myself, and I'll make it really difficult, and then I'll be able to look for myself. And he hides itself, she, whatever, hides itself in human beings and does it so well that it actually forgets where it's put itself.
Right.
Okay?
Until those people that remember,
Yeah, and then it goes around the world looking for itself, guess where? Outside.
Uh-huh.
Listening to other people, listening to all the traditions, which have been fine in their way, but we seem to be coming into a time when we're being asked, is this really true for you? Is this your experience? Or do you believe what somebody else says? And we're beginning to be hungry, thirsty, yearning for it to be our own experience.
Right.
For the sacredness of me, the God of me, to find itself in my mortality, so-called, in my flesh.
You know, I like that story, but the only problem I have with that is if it is true, and I think it is true, why do we... When we find ourselves in those moments of life living us, then why do we ever forget? Why do we ever get back into the character? Because once you think we'd recognize ourselves as that God, we would never forget. And yet, we seem to. That's the only part.
That's the play. That's the play.
But once we remembered, we would remember. And there it was. The play is over. Or begun.
But the play, you know, the play, you want some fun in it. You don't want to find the answer in the first 2 seconds. You know, it's fun looking for it and finding it, and then, oh, shit, I've lost it again. Where did I put it? I don't know. Like the other day, I put my... I had a mobile phone, and I was talking a long time, and it got so hot, I put it in the fridge. About half an hour later, I could hear this bloody phone ringing. Couldn't find the damn thing. Couldn't look everywhere for it. And eventually it stopped ringing because I couldn't find it. And that, of course, I'd forgotten. I'd put it in the fridge. And I actually, it's rather a good metaphor for what our good Lord, call it that, you know, he lost himself in drag as the fridge, as you, me, mortality. And lo and behold, guess what? He forgot where he put himself. So he has to go on looking for it. And then you find a taste of it, a little smell of it, it rings a little bit, and you think, oh, there it is. Oh, shit, I can't find where it is. So you look somewhere else, so you go through the traditions, religions, all manner of exercises and all manner of stuff, and eventually what happened to me, I looked through all kinds of things. I basically have a religious nature, which means I'm curious about what I really am. And... I went outside. I listened to people. I believed people, and it didn't work. I still wasn't satisfied until, guess what? I remembered. Hang on. I remember. I must have heard it again. That people say, look inside. What could they be meaning? So I began to look inside, and I found. First of all, I came up against this apparent nothing. You turn your attention around and you look and you think, so where is this I? And how can I locate it? I couldn't find it. And immediately my mind wanted to go out and follow something else and ask somebody else questions and find out what they did. And I eventually, something in me stuck with looking inside, and I abided with the quietness I found, which I have to say felt like nothing. I mean, if this is for the people who don't want anything to do with religion, which I completely understand, because there are many, many dogmas and things that are not delivered truly these days in all the religions. It's the surface of them. And I'd done all that, and it wasn't satisfying me, and I eventually abided. I love the word abide. I abided as quietness. And quietly, the quietness began to talk to me. Of course, it's not in words. It was in my heart. And I began to release my tension, even my muscles, and think, oh, this feels nice. This feels true. I think I'll follow this. And then, of course, activities would come, the phone would go, the children would scream, blah, 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 the car would break down or whatever, and you lose it again. And then you think, oh, I feel yearning. What was it I was yearning for? Ah, yes. It was that I found when I was really quiet.
Some people, though, do seem to somehow abide in it all the time once they found it. And
yes, it does seem like that. It does seem maybe, but where, you know, the life is very individual. None of us find it the same way.
That's
some
true.
People can find it through great silence. I'm sure top quality sportsmen find it in top quality performances. They break through something into another field. Certainly,
right.
Musicians do. I mean, look at people like Ashkenazi or various pianists, Alfred Brendel, or I don't know who around here the great one. But it would be the same for you as for us over in England.
Mick Jagger.
And when you know, yeah, exactly. But they learn a craft which is not learning a discipline. It's learning to becoming intimate with an instrument. Let's take a violin or a piano. And you get to know that violin and that piano and the way you play it, the way you touch it so well that it starts playing itself. You play with it almost.
It plays through you.
Exactly.
Yes.
And then you're through into a different dimension of activity and you're not doing it. I mean, I can't speak about music because I'm not a musician, but I see it in my students and I see it in myself. When I do it, it always has a slight kind of stink of striving in it. And I really don't like it. But when you get a run on this quietness and it starts to play itself because you know yourself, you know your instruments so well that you can respond to what's in front of you in a playful, respectful, quiet way.
You said it has the fragrance of eternity when I talked to you yesterday.
Yes, I think it does.
Yeah, so you're touching all the aspects of one's being because you're feeling in your work, in your workshops called Drawn Home, you're feeling into it, you're actually seeing, you're hearing the quietness, you're tasting this eternal aspect of being.
We're born, Alan, as empty, like we said earlier. We slip out into the world, we're absolutely virgin. There's nothing there but pure, naked existence. You could call it being. And then everything gets added. And that being is always there, but it gets more covered and more covered up. You know, we wake up in the morning, whoops, I've got to go and cook the breakfast, I want to go and have a pee, blah, 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 and it gets covered. But actually, if you wake up first thing in the morning, sometimes you can catch that moment when actually nothing's going on. Now that, nothing, like a very newborn child. I mean, I don't know if you've ever pretended you're a newborn child, but
yeah,
I have.
I do just lay there in the morning and just...
Exactly.
And feel peace, with no thought.
That peace is always there.
Right, but I love that you can help people then express that peace. That's what I think is so beautiful about your work, Drawn Home, because you're drawing people, or people are drawn home to themselves in that
exactly
workshop.
Which is, I mean, my teacher Cecil used to joke with us. Actually, it wasn't a joke; he meant it really seriously, but it sounded like a joke. He said, "Of course, education is nothing but organized crime." Well,
right.
Of course, not all proper education. If you lead out that which is there, that's not a crime. What's a crime is to be a success, to be frightened of being a failure, and to do all that neurotic stuff, oh, I'm no good, I'm too this, I'm too that, I'm a failure, or I'm great, or I'm better than most people, I'm special. All this is the crime because it cuts us off like clouds cover the sun. These aspects that come up through our education cut us off from the sun of love, you could say.
Right, and the sun of
which
joy.
Burns in our bodies, in our hearts.
You want to hear a great poem that sort of talks about this by Rumi. He says,
yeah.
if you want the unseen world, so it's sort of like going in a way beyond a little bit what you're saying, because you're saying the unseen world, but Rumi says, if you want the visible reality, then you're merely a worker. And if you want the unseen world, you're not living your truth. Both wishes are foolish, but you'll be forgiven for forgetting that what you really want is love's confusing joy.
Absolutely.
And that's what you're saying. Let life live you by getting out of the way and experiencing.
Yes, and I mean, you brought up Rumi, and I think a lovely quote of him, which I would prefer to actually read because I might not get it completely accurate,
because I think you are saying that.
Yes, this is Rumi now I'm quoting, which is the same. We're talking about a field which is very difficult to put a name on. He puts the name field on it. He says, out beyond ideas of right doing or wrongdoing, there is a field. I'll meet you there. When the soul lies down in that grass, the world is too full to talk about. Ideas, language, even the phrase each other, doesn't make any sense.
And
I think she puts it very beautifully like that.
Yeah, that's exactly what you're talking, because it's our mind that wants to make sense of it. And what you're talking to is this thing that's not about the mind at all. It's about pure being.
Exactly. And pure being, of course, is actually the only thing we all share.
Right.
And I mean, you and I saw each other today, and for a moment, we both knew we shared this.
Well, we saw each other. I saw you in there, in me, and you saw me in here.
Yes.
Consciousness saw itself.
Exactly. Amen, actually.
Mm-hmm. So the thing about your work, getting back in the way, because as we kind of wrap up, is that you can help or facilitate, whatever you want, people feel that quietness. Somehow you can help them reach that through whatever means. Well, how do you do that? I mean,
well,
but I think you
I
do.
I don't do it, of course. All I do is lead them to let's go into the hands. We draw with all manner of instruments, but let's say the hands. I lead them to touch quietness, because you know, all so many of us have been damaged by concepts, ideas, insults, disapproval, inhibition, being pushed back, and being certainly emotionally brutalized and often physically brutalized. So we're wounded.
Yeah.
And how do you get unwounded? And you certainly can't get unwounded with thoughts. And my experience is the only way you can get unwounded is to come back like an animal. If an animal gets wounded, it goes away and it goes into a hedge and it licks its wound. And so this licking of the wound I'm using just as a metaphor for coming home into the heart, which has been, all of us have been betrayed. You know, for your second birthday, you're given a lovely red ball, and you think this is great, and the first thing you'll do is your parents say, you know, let the guy next door play with it. And you start screaming and get smacked. Well, I call that betrayal.
Right.
It's a very simplistic example. But so we've all had it. So we're all separated from love one way or another. So somehow we have to lick our own hearts. Or we have to take our baby back in our arms and cuddle it and cradle it until it comes, till we come home, it comes home again to being okay. I'm okay. Actually, I'm fine. Actually, guess what? I really like the taste of myself.
And how do we do that? By just doing what? Because people have had such hard times and been so abused. I mean, it's hard for people to even get that far, to cradle themselves.
Well, okay, I'm going to be very ordinary functional here and say it to you. I've talked about touching the paper, which is part of drawing, part of the language of drawing, the kickoff point of the language of drawing. But let's say you have somebody who is damaged, frightened, anxious, and negative. And words aren't going to get through to them because they're completely deaf to words. So let's say we just get some music, very simple music, which has a bit of a rhythm in it. Mm. And we just say, let's just stand here together and do nothing. And just let this music come in to our bodies and talk to us. And very slowly, you could say, well, so if the music talks to you, you know, maybe you could just let your body
sway a little bit.
So you sway a little bit, very gently. It's almost imperceptible. It wouldn't even show to start with. They'd be moving inside, swaying inside, and they'd be, because they're frightened, they wouldn't even dare to let it show. Slowly, that fear melts because the music rhythm is very sweet and beguiling, and it softens the fear, and then suddenly their bodies are actually swaying, and then suddenly maybe a foot comes up. And then maybe another foot comes up, and maybe a hand comes up, and they start moving with the music, which 10 minutes before was impossible because they were frozen with anxiety and fear. So that's just one tiny, tiny example of a very simple way to come back to our quietness. I mean, I know I must sound incredibly boring.
No. It's interesting, but no, you're not. I don't think you're boring. I think it's inspiring that...
It's because it's palpable, Alan. You know, we can talk about peace, we can talk about love, we can talk about God, we can talk about sacredness, and blah, 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 and it means nothing to people in words.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm talking about is palpable in us. We can recognize it if we are willing to stop running away and stand still and just stop, and I mean just stop everything, and abide there in that nothing, apparent nothing. Of course it's living, but it appears like, oh, it can't be that, that's too simple. And just say, okay, thanks, mind, I don't need you at the moment, and we stay there. That rest is alive, and that rest arises like steam comes off a lake in the autumn.
Thank you, Muriel.
And that steam is palpable, is all I can say.
And I think you're right. And I know you're right. And I know we have that in us, and everyone can touch that same place.
Absolutely. Everybody. You don't have to be clever. You don't have to be anything. You don't have to be educated. All of us can do it.
And that's the only thing, in a sense, that people really want, that place, to find that place.
It's all we want, actually. It's all any of us want. We just don't know it.
Thank you.
It's so simple, Alan. We miss it, actually.
Well, I think we're getting it. I have to wrap up because we're almost out of time here.
Okay.
But we will continue. Oh. I will. We'll do a television interview this week, and this will be on the website. And your website is drawnhome, drawnhome.co.uk, and you'll be teaching a class in New York.
Dot co dot uk.
Drawnhome.co.uk.
Yeah.
And you'll be teaching a class on Thursday of this week at the One Spirit Learning Alliance, which is 330 West 38th Street on the 15th floor.
What time? 7 o'clock.
7 o'clock, so people can just show up there. I'm also doing a discussion with Alex Gray that same day on creativity at the East West Bookstore at 78 Fifth Avenue. But thank you, Muriel, and we'll be in touch. I'll call you later.
Yeah, lovely. It has been a pleasure. Thank you for inviting me. I feel very honored to have done this. And
There's so much more there is to talk about in your process, and people should be see you work. I think that's really beautiful. So you're also doing a course at home. at Omega up in Rhinebeck in 2 weeks. People can look at the eOmega website.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll be back in New York.
And then I'll be back in New York. Yeah, I'll come back again soon. After the Omega course, I go home. But
mm-hmm.
I'll certainly be back next summer, probably for a bit longer.
Okay, thanks. I'll be in touch with you anyway. And you'll come back as a guest.
I'll come back when I'm invited.
You're invited all the time. You're always a guest. Anyway, this is Alan Steinfeld for New Realities. I've been talking to Muriel Gold. That is her website, drawnhome.co.uk. My website is newrealities.com. If you want to reach me, email me at newrealities@earthlink.net. Check out the website, newrealities.com. And I'll see you next week or talk to you next week. Thank you.
Was it good? Okay. We've got a slight